Blog Talk Radio.
Al Porter. Blog Talk Radio, what it is, man.
You're now rocking with the man in the streets who put music, action, and news to the beat. You're now rocking with the man in the streets. Al Porter got the news, Q-T on the beat. Yeah, you're now rocking with the man in the streets who put music, action, and news to the beat. Yeah, you're now rocking with the man in the streets. Al Porter got the news, Q-T on the beat. Reporting live, this is Blog Talk Radio. Of knowledge equal power, my knowledge is what they hating for. Al Porter got it locked for an hour block, and Q-T got the block in the
master lock.
It's Monday night, what you doing round 9? Tune in to Al Porter, Blog Talk going live. These other sessions is job, just leading the walking blind. Remember the revolution ain't gonna be televised. No Google Chrome, cause search ain't gonna be no flash drive. Won't last to my lines, I'm opening people minds. Remember it's Monday night, tune in around 9.
Tune in around 9.
You're now rocking with the man in the streets who put music, action, and news to the beat. You're now rocking with the man in the streets. Al Porter got the news, kill stay on the beat. Yeah, you're now rocking with the man in the streets who put music, action, and news to the beat. Yeah, you're now rocking with the man in the streets. Al Porter got the news, kill stay on the beat. You're now rocking with the man in the streets who put music, action, and news to the beat. You're now rocking with the man in the streets. Al Porter got the news, kill stay on the beat. Yeah.
And welcome once again to none other than Al Porter, man in the streets, music, activism, news. The one thing about this program, you never know what might happen, when it might happen, or how it might happen. And this is a special Friday night edition. I see a phone caller. Before I go to the 216-237, let me go to 216-314 and see who do we have on the phone line with us.
How's it going? This is Matthew Ahn, candidate for Cuyahoga County Prosecutor in this upcoming Tuesday's election.
Wow. Tuesday is here already. Upcoming. I even know of the Soul to the Poll event that's coming up this Sunday. But now I just want to find out from you, how are you feeling going into this coming Tuesday?
I'm feeling great. I think that we have really been in the community, really talked with folks in the community over the last now 14 months. And, you know, I've been down at early voting for the last several weeks. Folks are coming in. They're saying, hey, I'm excited to vote for you, because they understand the kind of change we can make in this election, the kind of power that a new prosecutor can wield to actually help the office work for the community and with the community rather than against the community.
You know something? I believe that people are excited also, just for the simple fact we have not had any real, I will say, challenges for prosecutor, you know, in the recent times. We haven't had any real challenges. It seems like it's always the one main person who's running, and then it's hard to find somebody who is making it feel like it's a legitimate contender. So with that being said, I'm going to ask you, what causes you to run the way you're running? Is it because you're expecting to see real change? You want to be a part of real change? What is it that's fueling, you know, the race, especially coming from you, Matthew Ahn?
Definitely. I would not have gotten into this race if I didn't think that we could win, if I didn't think that we could actually make this real change through the prosecutor's office. And You know, what I've seen over the last several years is somebody who came into office in 2016 making a lot of promises about what they were going to do as the new prosecutor and seeing none of those promises really upheld, with maybe one or two exceptions here and there. Our outcomes here in Cuyahoga County have gotten worse, not better. Over the last 5 years, Cuyahoga County has tried nearly as many children as adults as the rest of Ohio combined, and 92% of those children are black. Over that same five-year span, Cuyahoga County has issued more death sentences than any other county in the United States. And Cuyahoga County historically has led the state by a wide margin in confirmed wrongful convictions. And yet we see an office that when somebody gets out of prison after 20 or 30 or even 45 years, this office is choosing to take those folks back to trial on their original decades-old charges, even though they have new evidence of their innocence. This is not an office that is actually built to serve the community. And, you know, I simply think that we can do better.
I agree with you 110%. What I'm going to do is, at least before I ask anything else, because phone callers are extremely important, I'm going to go to 216-237, that's 216-237, who's waited very patiently to see what's on their mind. Hey, you're on live.
Black House fans, how we doing tonight? I am so excited to hear Mr. Matthews work hard to become a prosecutor in the Cuyahoga County. That just sounds wonderful for me. From what I just heard, talking about injustice when it comes not just for blacks, but for anybody being unjust. And I like what I hear, so I'm going to keep listening. It's Black House Sound, and Mr. Matthews, keep doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much. Black House Sound, I know for a fact they have some very hot new material that's out on the YouTube channel, so I appreciate that very much. On the flip side of things, I am going to at least ask you, Matthew, when it comes down to it, have you heard a lot of what the last callers talked about when it comes to injustice? Because there are quite a few people who feel like they've gone through a lot of injustice as it is.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we can see that just in, you know, what's happened in the community in the last several years. Right? We've seen crime up, especially serious juvenile crime. I think because the prosecutor's office has failed in the very important work of prevention. But at the same time, right, not only are folks being over-victimized, they're being over-criminalized. You know, we one of the big things that I think is the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office has a reputation of doing is overcharging people, right? And this is what oftentimes leads to people taking plea deals for things that they may not have even done in the first place, just to get their case over with, just to get out of jail. We know that overcharging, over-indicting is a huge problem here in Cuyahoga County. If you compare it to any other county in the area, a one-count or two-count indictment turns into a 20-count indictment. And yet, my opponent, the incumbent prosecutor, at a debate that we had last week, said that he's never seen a single case that's been overcharged, which is just an absolutely ridiculous statement for an incumbent prosecutor, somebody who's seen that office through the last 7 years. We've seen so many instances of overcharging in the last 7 years. And, you know, somebody who says something like that, I think, really has no credibility in terms of what they're claiming.
And with that being said, talk to us about data and research, the data and research that goes into this.
Definitely. I mean, what we should be looking to do, what we should be expecting from our prosecutor's office is an approach that doesn't just react to crime, but also prevents the crime from happening in the first place. And there's been a lot of studies done, a lot of research done, on how to actually do that using criminal justice system. But what we've seen from this office are policies that do the opposite. They actually make crime worse, because what we're doing is we're throwing people's lives away when we don't need to. And so as a result, what I want to do is take that data and that research and actually apply it to the prosecutor's office and the criminal justice system here in Cuyahoga County, so that we can use the strategies that are proven to reduce crime and to uplift our communities. Now, there's a second type of data and research that's out there, not just what are the best ways to do things, but also what are the outcomes out of the prosecutor's office right now. And we actually have one of the least transparent prosecutor's offices in the entire country. It's basically impossible to get any data about how the prosecutor's office is doing, which is kind of silly because we're the clients of the prosecutor's office, the people of Cuyahoga County. We deserve to know how our lawyer is doing, and yet we don't. A lot of what we know is either because the state is keeping or releasing that data, or we're going off of the claims that the elected prosecutor is making. And given some of the things that he said, like overcharging doesn't exist, I'm not really inclined to take him at his word on everything.
You know something? I like the fact that you constantly talk about data and research. I'm going to stop the conversation right now because at least now I'm getting a chance to ask a lot more questions than I have been able to ask in the past. But I'm going to stop and go to our – we have another phone caller from the 216-347, 216-347. How are you doing out there?
Hello, brother. How are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. And what about you?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. I'm doing wonderful. So
you are former president of Black Lives Matter for the Deaf. Am I correct?
Right. And also, I'm the candidate for. I am the candidate of House of Representatives of D.C. I'm running for Congress. Okay. So the first thing I want to change is the justice system, okay? How they begin people with a disability, put them in a jail with a person who committed murder, okay? Let's talk about what happened. Well, let's talk about going back what happened in Baltimore when they put a deaf guy in a cell with a person who already murdered somebody, okay? Now, let's ask our prosecutor in Cuyahoga County, what is your policy, what are you going to do when you have a murderer putting them with a person with a disability?
Okay. That's an excellent question to ask him.
Because if you look at the CO of the jail, watch the deaf man get murdered. Mm. Watch him. It's like they're watching a movie coming from the dead, okay? That's how terrible it was, okay? Now, they should not ever put a disabled person or deaf or person with a disability in a cell jail with a person with a disability. And you know, I come up with some hard questions, okay? What are you doing?
Yes.
What is your office going to do? We could talk,
thank
but we
very
want
much.
Talk.
I'm going
that's,
to
that's
at least
a, that's,
put you on hold so he can answer that question. And thank you for asking that.
That is a great question, because we know, right, how especially folks with disabilities are oftentimes sort of ground up by the system. It is really an injustice. And while I don't have direct control over the jail as county prosecutor, while I wouldn't have that power, I think one of the important things here is how are we going to think about folks who have disabilities and whether or not they should even be in the jail in the first place, right? Is part of their charges, right, or part of their potential charges stemming from that disability in the first place, right? I actually worked as a special education attorney for a couple of years, and that experience was extremely useful. It's kind of, you know, honestly tragic how useful it was when I was working on people's sentencing memoranda as a public defender, because oftentimes I would start to write up their life story and I was like, hey, this person, you know, had an issue, maybe a special education issue, and they were either not diagnosed or diagnosed incorrectly in school. And that led to resentment, that led to acting out, and all of a sudden, here we are in the criminal justice system, and this person shouldn't even be here in the first place. And so what I think what I have the power to do is to look at these cases and say, well, should we be charging this in a way that this person is in the jail in the first place? And if the answer is no, then they shouldn't even be in that jail. Right, we should be giving them opportunities for diversion or some kind of treatment that they might have needed, you know, previously, but we can at least give them now, rather than putting them in jail where there is a possibility, right, that they may end up in the same pod or the same cell as somebody dangerous, somebody who may not understand that disability. And that's really, I think, the way that we can deal with that problem sort of even before it happens. We want to make sure that folks who do not need to be in the criminal justice system at all aren't there. And that will make a lot of the other injustices in the criminal justice system easier to solve.
You know, I can see that. What I am going to do is 216-322. Like I say, anybody who calls in, I appreciate you for having some tough questions to ask. 216-322, you're on live. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm doing well, and yourself?
I'm doing well myself. Do you have anything you would like to ask candidate for prosecutor Cuyahoga County, Matthew Ahn?
Yes, I do. Hi, Mr. Ahn. It's nice to have you available for my question. I've got two questions, and then I'm going to just listen. My first question is, why haven't I heard of you before? I mean, I heard a little bit about you tonight earlier in a conversation with someone who told me that you've been around, but I haven't heard of you. And my next question is, just in case you are not elected, will you be available to help help the residents of the city of Cleveland? And I'll just listen now.
Thank you so much. And, ooh, those are two very, very important questions that even I'd like to know the answer to on, especially the second one, but it's a good one. Why hasn't she heard of you before? And I've heard that from a few other people here in there.
It's a great question. You know, the way that I've sort of tried to advocate for folks, you know, before stepping out to run for this office, I've really, you know, I haven't tried to hog the spotlight or anything like that. I think the best thing that I can do to really sort of advocate to the needs of the community, the best way that I've seen to do it, is to really empower the folks who are living through, you know, a lot of these issues, to try to make sure that that their voices are heard. And so, for example, when the county government was talking about building a replacement jail on a toxic waste site, what I was doing was trying to sort of plug into the jail coalition, other activists who are working on this issue, and try to sort of give them a sense of the legal structure, right? Who is the best person to direct this particular advocacy at, right? Are we going to go to county council? Are we going to go to the county executive? Are we going to go to, you know, the consultants, right? Where can we make sure that people's voices are heard? And that's really where I think that I can add that value. That's where I've added that value in the past. Of course, being in an elected office is a little bit different, right? I do have to sort of do all of this campaigning. I have to put myself out there. And so it is a little bit of a different role than I've been in before. And, you know, that might be one reason why, you know, some of the stuff that I've done in the past, it's been a little bit more behind the scenes. But that's the sort of work that I've been involved with over the last several years. In case I don't win, and I'm going to win, but in case I don't win, you know, I still live in downtown Cleveland. This is my city. This is where I grew up. This is the kind of thing, you know, these kinds of issues are the things that I'm going to advocate for, whether that is at that county council level, whether it is at the city council level. I will use the platform that I've been able to gain over the last year, and I'm going to keep fighting for these issues because they are too important. They are way too vital to our community and to our success to let just fall by the wayside. I am going to keep fighting for the city of Cleveland. I'm going to keep fighting for the people in the city of Cleveland, for racial justice, for justice in the criminal legal system, and for justice for all of us, because we deserve it. That's truly, it's as simple as that. And so, you know, anything that I can do, anything, any folks that I can connect with, help amplify their voices, I'm here to do that.
You know, in hearing you go through that and say that, can you at least tell us some of the work that you have been doing before you even ran, like some of the offices mm-hmm. you've held? And some of the jobs you've done, what do you feel has at least been there and worked for you that you feel is bringing you right to the table?
Sure. So I've worked over the course of my law practice career as both a special education attorney representing parents whose children were being denied accommodations. I've also worked as a public defender in state and in federal court. Now, for a few years, I was at the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Northern District of Ohio. And in that role, I will say my political activity was a little limited, just because of the sort of nature of the job. I had some restrictions. But for the last 3 years, I've been working at Cleveland State. I've been teaching at the law school as a law professor. And in that role, I've been able to really be a little bit more flexible and really get into the community and help folks advocate for things. And so, you know, the biggest success I think we had was being able to, get the that jail proposal for this site, this toxic waste site in the Industrial Valley, off the table. But I'd been involved in trying to advocate for other things as well. I advocated against the contract for ShotSpotter, which is a technology that actually really isn't technology at all. It's just a bunch of intrusive surveillance microphones, and it's been proven to not work in other cities. you know, this is, it's something where city council in Cleveland ends up deciding to go with it. It looks like they're not going to renew it, though, because they're realizing what folks in the community have been advocating for all along, that it's not actually effective. Things along these lines. You know, I was somebody who was a finalist for the police commission. I was hoping to again provide that sort of structural kind of view on the commission. I was not selected, but that was something where you know, I believed in this idea of meaningful police oversight, things like that. These are just some of the things I've been involved with over the last several years here in Cleveland.
I feel you on that, and I can appreciate it. What I will ask you also is, what are some of the qualifications on what you've done that makes you feel like it's your time? This is what you should be doing, especially with, again, I'll say, your qualifications for this job.
Sure. I think it's important to realize that the elected county prosecutor really has two roles. They are head of policy for the prosecutor's office, and they're head of personnel for the prosecutor's office. And so this is somebody who really should be thinking about best practices all the time, whether that is in the courts or whether that is in how to run an office. And that takes a lot of understanding of research and data across all sorts of different areas, and that's exactly the kind of work that I've been doing over the last decade. For example, while I was at the Federal Public Defender's Office, when the pandemic hit, there was a lot of medical release motions from federal prison. And this was actually a very new mechanism that didn't exist until 2019. And I put together a series of appeals that actually set the standard in federal courts in this area for when they would consider these medical release motions. And that standard actually just recently got folded into the federal sentencing guidelines. So I've shown that I can take all these, you know, this large amount of data, turn it into a strategy in court, and win. That being said, you know, my opponent has experience that does look different than mine. He has been in that prosecutor's office for quite some time. But I wouldn't qualify that as experience necessarily. It's maybe more entrenchment, right? People who think a little bit differently than the establishment, people who look a little different, and people who run for office based on what they know rather than who they know, right? These are folks who oftentimes have their experience questioned, and that's what my opponent has done this entire time. But right, he is only really offering the same old politics that we've seen here in Cuyahoga County. And I represent a clean break from the old politics as usual. We can do things differently, not just based on your connections, but actually based on what makes the most sense for the community, what will help the community heal and strengthen and grow. And that's what I'm looking to do.
You know, it's very excellent. And the one thing that I can say is that people are always prompted when you call in. They ask you to hit the one button if you want to speak. Sometimes people don't hit that button, so that means they want to listen, but I will come through and ask you if you have anything to add. If you just want to stay silent, you can. But now back to the other. My thing right now with you on that is, can you tell us some of the things that you might not have expected when you first decided to run, some things that might have caught your attention that you either expected, didn't expect, didn't foresee, talk to?
I think there are really two things that I would say in response to that. The first is, I really expected that this would be a campaign where different parts of the county might end up voting very differently. But the conversations we're having, the talk about injustice in our criminal system, these are conversations that I've been able to have all across the county, from Bay Village to Solon to Cleveland Ward 1 to Cleveland Ward 9 to Cleveland Ward 17 to Strongsville to Richmond Heights. People realize that the system is broken and it needs a change. And I think I underestimated how much everyone across Cuyahoga County has already realized this. And so I've just been really pleasantly surprised by the conversations I've been able to have everywhere in Cuyahoga County. The second thing that I would say I think I didn't expect is how my opponent has reacted to just even having a challenge in the first place. It truly appears that he just is not used to somebody challenging him at all. The Cuyahoga County Democratic Party held an endorsement vote back in early January, just to see, you know, who's going to be on that sample ballot that's always handed out at the polls. And we managed to block the incumbent prosecutor from getting that party endorsement, which I think is a good thing. We as the voters should have the opportunity to decide and think about these really important public safety and criminal justice issues. But my opponents didn't really see it that way. In the 72 hours after that endorsement vote, he made statements to the media blaming in quick succession the chairman of the Cuyahoga County Democratic Party, all young people and progressives, the entire cities of Bay Village and Lyndhurst, and Tamir Rice's mother. A month ago, there was a candidate forum sponsored by Greater Cleveland Congregations. It's a group of churches and synagogues and mosques that care about criminal justice reform. And during a planning meeting, my opponent apparently took some issue with one of the questions they were going to ask. Instead of showing up to the forum and explaining why he disagreed with the question, he instead put out a press release, said he was not coming, and accused this church group of extortion. This is the kind of person who has the power to charge somebody, you know, over-indict them or not. Right? And I think it is just, it's very concerning to me that this is how he chooses to react to people when he has the power, again, to over-indict people or not. It is very, very concerning to me.
I think that's very concerning to a lot of people, and just you going there and explaining that is such a deep, heavy concept that what I'm going to do is take a breather and take a look at the 216-412 number that is chimed in. 216-412. How are you doing out there?
I'm doing awesome. In my peace of mind, I'm doing very awesome. I do have some things that I would like to talk about or ask the prosecutor, the upcoming possible prosecutors. I don't know what I missed. I met you at the.
Then ask away.
How far as the type of policy you're going to have, and as far as when are you going to be able to look more into people's cases and talk to these prosecutors, talk to the these public defenders that's supposed to represent their clients, have them not go on there just trying to take plea deals, especially when they're innocent, not basically embezzle money from the community and stuff like that, just trying to make a deal and by a slap on the wrist. So, for things of that nature. going to relook at the cases, follow up on them, not have anything, you know what I'm saying, people like millionaire people and all different type of culture-wise incarceration, had to go through certain penalties if you are elected. I know, what are you going to do? Are you going to push that? Are you going to push those things of that nature as far as with all getting office and everything, not just get in there and not just say you're going to do it, though. Get in there and actually make things happen and not do what this Michael Malley has caused a bunch of corruption and discriminated on a bunch of minority urban, a lot of people from urban areas, melanated, for example, and also of other ethnicities and stuff. You know,
so honestly, look into cases. There's a mm-hmm. part in there about embezzling money, another part about plea deals, especially when somebody's innocent. Am I correct so far? Because I want to pin it down to answer
yep.
some of these questions.
Yeah,
all
and
right.
So there's three things I want to say to that. I think it's an excellent sort of question that gets at a lot of different things. First
and
off,
I thank him for
you know,
those
I
questions.
Absolutely. I teach a class on racial justice at CSU, and we know that whenever there is some kind of discretion in any kind of legal system, right, that discretion is always used against people of color in particular. And the only way to actually rectify that, to reverse that, is to be very deliberate about how you set up how you use that power, right? That's at least my baseline coming in. Because we can't just say, you know we cannot create racial justice simply by saying go and letting people just do their thing. The system itself is going to cause structural bias. And so I know that that's going to be something that I'm going to have to deal with. Now, in terms of folks who plead guilty even though they are innocent, right, one of the things I do want to do is to restore the Conviction Integrity Unit. The Conviction Integrity Unit is a unit that reviews wrongful conviction claims. And for several years, there was an external portion to this unit that would make recommendations to the prosecutor about how they thought these wrongful conviction claims should be resolved. But in 2019, there were a couple cases where Conviction Integrity Unit recommended that somebody's conviction be overturned, and my opponent, the prosecutor, overruled them. He was like, I'm not going to go with your recommendation. And then for a couple of years after that, the Conviction Integrity Unit never met, and then they were like, no, we're clearly not doing anything here, we're just window dressing. They all resigned all at once. And in the 18 months since that happened, nobody has been appointed to replace them. I want to actually restore that Conviction Integrity Unit and strengthen it. I want to give it, you know, more powers and duties than it had even in the past. And I want to make sure that at least one of those members of the Conviction Integrity Unit on the external board is a formerly incarcerated person, because I don't think the conversation is complete without that perspective. But part of that question was about, how do we make sure that these kinds of plea deals don't even happen in the first place? And I think the answer to that is actually, hey, we need to stop overcharging entirely. And if we do that, right, if somebody is not being charged with attempted murder for, like, a fight, right, if somebody is not being charged with, robbery for, sort of pushing a security guard as they're trying to take a candy bar out of a store, if we're not seeing that kind of overcharging, I think that a lot of those plea deals where folks are pleading guilty even though they're innocent, they're not going to happen nearly as much. And if there are attorneys that are sort of still trying to push these plea deals, even when somebody's not being overcharged, it's going to be a lot more obvious, it's going to be a lot more noticeable, and then it will be a lot easier to deal with and to sort of make that known as well. And that's the way that we can sort of prevent these kinds of things from even happening in the future, not just sort of dealing with them after the conviction has already happened.
I thank you for at least delving into those things. The hard thing that I will ask, because it is a harder question that I have to ask you right now, and I heard some rough ones, so if you could weather those, you could probably weather this one. But the thing is, why should anybody expect you to do anything to help? Because a prosecutor's job, your job is to prosecute. It isn't to be helpful. Your job is to prosecute any and everyone to come through before you and make sure that they, quote unquote, basically speaking, get locked up or at least penalized. And to that, you say what?
Well, that's how the system has worked. It's not necessarily how the system has to work. It is, I think, a relic of, you know, this sort of quote-unquote tough-on-crime era that we had. The people think that this is how a prosecutor is supposed to do things. But remember who the clients are of the prosecutor's office. It's the people of Cuyahoga County. And so the best way for a prosecutor to represent the people of Cuyahoga County is to do things that are in the community's interest, that will actually make the communities safer, stronger, and healthier. And the way to do that is to seek justice in every case, even if justice does not mean, you know, the maximum punishment. And in a lot of cases, it doesn't. And so what we want to do is to make the big question in every case, hey, what is the right thing to do? How can we get this person on the right track? How do we actually make the community stronger? Right? In a lot of cases, that's going to mean diversion. In a lot of cases, that's going to mean, hey, you're going to be on a specialty docket, and we're going to give you the supports that you need. In a lot of cases, what that means is, hey, we need to think about child and family services and making sure that we're making parents' jobs easier rather than taking children out of the home at the slightest sort of sign of trouble. What that means is all of these folks out here who are trying to do these community programs, we need to make sure that they're supported rather than just doing their jobs in a silo. We need to think bigger about what the community needs. We need to think about crime prevention, not just reaction to crime. And that is the way in which the prosecutor's office can actually represent the interests of the people of Cuyahoga County. And that's what I'm running to do.
You know, because you are brave and bold enough to take some of the phone callers, and, yeah, I'm going to another phone caller from the 216-562. 216-562. You have a question to ask this evening?
Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Hi, this is Maybach. I was just trying to find out, okay, what will be done about the offenders? I don't know if this has anything to do with the same, I don't know if anybody said it or not, but offenders that keep going back in front of the court for similar charges such as murder, and not one murder, two murders, three murders, and still out on the street able to terrorize people. What is going to be put in play for people that keep getting, like, in front of the judge with that same case? That's basically my question, because if I have somebody that if you know somebody that's steady getting in front of the judge and they're steady getting the same similar charges and nothing's being done to this person and they're feeling like they're inferior and nothing's going to happen to them.
Okay.
That's all my question.
That, I appreciate it. I'm going to allow you, Matthew Ahn, to definitely answer that.
Definitely. And this is, I think, the really important thing about what a prosecutor should use their power to do. Right? One of the first platform point for me is to target the crimes that harm our community. And we need to make sure that the prosecutor's office knows which crimes we need strong enforcement against. And that includes, right, crimes of violence, things like murder. It also includes sex crimes. It includes human trafficking, right? Things that sometimes maybe go a little bit sort of under-recognized, but are really crumbling how our communities can function. And, you know, there are certain crimes where, you know, what we need is not necessarily sort of support and resources and services. We do need to make sure that we are sending a message with the right crimes. And so, you know, that is the balance that I think has been thrown way out of whack with this current prosecutor's office. We've seen cases, including one a few months ago, where there was a trial in a first-degree felony rape case where the prosecutor's office actually ended up with the case being dismissed after trial because they'd forgotten to introduce really sort of baseline evidence about where the crime actually happened. Right, these are the sorts of failures that we're seeing under the current prosecutor's office, and that's absolutely unacceptable. We need to make sure that with these serious cases that the office is equipped to win a trial to make sure that we are sending a message.
I appreciate that, but this is kind of like double-edged because I know for a fact especially from the last phone caller, BWA, Black Women's Army, they've had recently dealing with a lot of missing people, including women, having to deal with the fact that in a couple of those cases, women's bodies turned up after they had searched for it, murdered, and having the suspect that went from being alleged to the actual charged suspect, they had different things come up. They had had charge after charge on a minor scale, and they were able to, I'll say, tap dance, skate, break dance, bug dance, whatever you want to call it, they were able to get by. You might not have intended on going as deep into it, but I just want to ask you, where do you see or what do you see being able to do to at least make sure that those type of things don't happen? Whereas, what do you feel you'll be able to bring to your job description to be able to keep those things from happening while at the same time being able to make sure you don't have the same effects of, quote-unquote, mischarging individuals, which comes back to our region having to pay people who are actually innocent? So, you know, with that being said, talk to me about what you can logically, logistically do.
Well, and I think I'm going to sound like a bit of a broken record because I think a lot of this does come back to the overcharging and overindicting that's happening. Like, if we're taking cases that really are probably either misdemeanors or low-level felonies, and we're charging them as first- or second-degree felonies, I think it becomes a lot harder for the office to distinguish between those kinds of overcharged cases and the really serious cases where we need stronger enforcement. And so, you end up having the sort of common practice of these overcharged cases. You know, maybe they're a first or second degree felony, and then the plea deal is to a misdemeanor. Well, if you're doing that, then you're looking at an actual serious case that's a first degree felony, and you're like, oh, we can plead that to a misdemeanor too. And if you can make actual distinction between those cases at the charging stage, then that kind of impulse will never happen. And I think that that is part of the conversation that needs to happen at that charging stage, because those charges affect so heavily what the conversation is about the case, regardless of what the actual facts are. And so the charges should actually be derived from the actual fact, the other way around. And that will help us identify, hey, these are the cases where we really need strong enforcement, and these are the cases where, you know, maybe what we need is something else.
With that all being said, what, if anything, is it you would like to talk about that maybe we didn't touch on that you feel is very important as we go into this coming Tuesday?
Oh, man. We've already covered a lot of ground. I think the one thing that I would mention that we haven't really talked about is, you know, actually two things. You know, we've seen the spike in serious juvenile crime, but part of the reason for that, again, is that the prevention piece has fallen down. We know that children generally don't go from zero to stealing 50 cars. They don't go from zero to shooting multiple people. And so the best way to prevent serious juvenile crime is to focus on the really, really young defendants that are coming in from juvenile court, kids that are 9 or 10 or 11 or 12 years old. But right now, those cases are being handled almost exclusively by people with less than 1 year of experience in the prosecutor's office. In other words, the cases that need the most resources and expertise are getting the fewest resources and expertise. This is just one example of how, you know, administration and management of the office is actually making us less safe. And it's one of the things that is an easy fix when I become prosecutor. The other thing I would mention is just one of the things that I've committed to is to move away from the cash bail system that is leading to more folks being held in the jail pre-trial than necessary. Right now, under cash bail, there are people in our county jail who are there because they cannot put a couple hundred dollars together. Meanwhile, people who are charged with murder and aggravated murder are still given an opportunity to pay their way out of jail. And neither of those things makes any sense. We should be using a public safety-based system where if you are a threat to the community, you're going to be in the jail pretrial. And if you're not, then we should be releasing you with whatever conditions will ensure the safety of the community. It will reduce the population of the jail. It will also make us safer all at the same time. We can do both.
I appreciate that. There was one person, they didn't have their hand up, but I'm going to give them a chance to chime in if they want to. 216-801, we appreciate you listening, but is there anything you would like to add on to the conversation this evening with Matthew Ahn, prosecutor and candidate for Cuyahoga County? 216-801, going once, going twice, going thrice. Thank you for listening. We have had a lot of people chime in, and no matter what, I just appreciate the fact that you didn't duck any questions this evening as best as possible. So I would like to know from you, how can people follow up on or find out more about your platform, especially we have Souls to the Poll this coming Sunday, which is going to be phenomenal. We have the actual election date, so we're in the midst of early voter election, all of that. Talk to me about how can people follow up and see things for themselves?
Definitely. So my website is matthew-on.com. That's matthew-ahn.com. And folks can go there to read more about me, to read more about my ideas, and to sign up to volunteer. We are looking for people to pass out literature at polling locations on Election Day if they're interested. And so please, you know, get involved if you can. There are two more days of early voting, tomorrow, Saturday, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., and then Sunday with Souls to the Polls from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. We're also going to be having a rally before the election this Monday at 5:30 p.m. at 105th and St. Clair. We hope that folks will join us. And then, of course, you can always vote on Election Day from 6:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. at your polling location.
I thank you once again. I appreciate you profoundly for at least being with us this evening and definitely making sure that you didn't duck anything. That's it. I appreciate it.
You know, if folks want to be an elected official, if they want to represent the people, they should be able to answer tough questions.
I 100% agree, but sometimes that's just not the case. So with that being said, enjoy your evening.
Thank you. You as well.
No problem. And as for everyone else who chimed in, I just want to at least take the time. I have to thank my partner in all of this, Emax the Image, who made sure that everything is always open to be able to do this type of programming. When I first worked with Emax and he offered the opportunity, I will say 13 years ago, his main thing was he definitely believed that the people needed to be heard. Honest testimony before I leave out this fine evening is that a few years ago, so we'll say we've been doing this for over 13 years, Al Porter, Man in the Streets, Music, Activism, News. It came from the fact that I had already done 3 years working with the Art McCoy University College of Common Sense radio show. When Emax offered the opportunity to be able to speak to really the hip-hop generation, hip-hop crowd, MAN, Music, Activism, News, and to be able to at least let people have their voice heard. That's where that M period, A period, M period, that's the acronym abbreviation for Man in the Streets. And we've been rolling for 13 plus years. So I'm very thankful for that. In the less than 2 minutes that I have left, it is phenomenal. I'll go back in, consult with Brother Emax, the Image, see what else is next. We have to be willing to do one main thing. HTA, hold them accountable. Matthew On wins. We cannot sit back and say we'll give him a whole year to figure out what he wants to do. We have to be willing to hold him accountable within 2 weeks of him taking office, being sworn in. We have to be able to hold them accountable for what they said on this radio program or at a debate at the City Club or whatever or wherever. We have to be able to hold them accountable for what they say and do. If we don't, then it's on us. We get exactly what we ask for. So as I sit back in the studio and chill back, I just want to thank everybody and say I appreciate you, and may you all stay blessed. look things up, even on his website, to make sure that this person is doing what they say they're going to do. That's it in a nutshell. I thank you. We're going to take our leave. Appreciate you. Peace.